play that music. Ooh. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode number 124 of Restitching the Tapestry.
Hello.
Oh, Ari, that red looks sultry.
I know. How are you doing today?
I am great. How are you?
Good. So we're apparently putting on makeup, talking about drag today.
We are. Like, this is our night, Ari, to... So, like, okay, so we probably should have done this episode during Pride Month, because let's be honest, with the state of the world and how drag has been vilified in various states, we probably should have, you know, had a little bit more commentary at that time about it, but you know what? What are you going to do? So, yeah, so tonight we wanted to do our episode about, like, focusing on, like, the history of drag, the significance of drag, our experience with drag, because as an art form, like, I think that it deserves, you know, conversation, you know, in the context of not necessarily a formal space, like, you know, when people think drag, they think of, like, Drag Race, which is great, but, like, there are day-to-day people who have experience with drag, too, that, you know, their experiences should be discussed as well. So I think that's kind of what we were thinking about tonight. I didn't let my eyebrow dry well enough. So
oh, no.
I know. I'm not, okay, so we're not doing full, like, if we were to do full-on drag, we would need, like,
hours.
Eight hours to prepare. And let's be honest, we don't have hours. So we have to work with what we got. And I'm going to look like a mutant with, like, half an eyebrow, which is fine. All right, tell me about...
How have you been? What have you been up to?
Oh, I've been... As everyone probably saw my prior video, going through medical crises. But, you know, hey, like... YOLO, everyone. I'm good, though. Like, despite that stress associated with it, I've been doing pretty well. I've been, like, still doing some gardening and stuff, because you know me. Like, if I'm not gardening, what am I doing?
Yeah, that's true. So, have you made any gardening videos? I haven't checked your channel to see if you've done any gardening stuff lately.
The most recent one I did was episode 4 of the gardening videos. I have not done anything since. I don't, like, I probably won't be doing another gardening video until we get some harvests going on, so.
I look forward to your gardening videos. They are very calming, and they are very, like, I look forward to them.
Well, thank you. That means a lot to me. Oh, my goodness. I messed up my eyebrows already. Oh, well.
What I've been up to is my sister is in town right now. Oh, God, that's really old. My sister is in town right now from Texas. Both my sisters are in town right now. And we have been hanging out. So we've been spending time together.
Oh, that's good. That is
really old. Really, really old.
Do you want to know that I know why my eyebrow's not working?
Why is that?
I forgot to set my eyebrow.
But I'm in my college class right now. I've got to watch a movie this week, and do a beat sheet on it, for my, screenwriting class. And I'm going to watch a movie by Xavier Dolan, if you know who that is.
That name sounds familiar to me.
He's a director who said he's just about to quit directing. And I haven't watched really any of his movies, but I really wanted to. There's one that's called I Killed My Mommy, and I wanted to watch his movie, that movie specifically.
I think that sounds familiar to me.
Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime, and it's supposed to be really good. And so I was like, oh, I should start watching some Xavier Dolan movies, because he's only 34 or something. He's a young director. But he said that he premieres at Cannes, the Cannes Movie Festival. But he's like really celebrated movie director, and people don't know who he is, apparently. But he's not a household name, at least. But he is like this really like very interesting person. So I'm like, gotta know who the up and coming directors are. So that's basically like what I'm.
I mean, yeah. in that area, that's kind of crucial, right?
Right.
I have a fan with me because a fan is a best friend.
Yeah.
I need to dry this brow.
So that's what's basically going on with me.
Well, I'm glad that this new class is starting out well, though. You're on what, week two of it?
Yeah, week two.
That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Let's see, anything else going on with me? So a lot of people, like this week, Godzilla Fest in Chicago. So normally I would be going to that, but obviously, like, having just bought a house and going through a slight medical crisis, I was like, I'm not going to go this year, you know?
Yeah.
I'll go next year. Okay. Is that enough? I don't know if that's enough. I cannot believe I forgot to set my eyebrow.
Do you want to do the show mission statement?
Yeah, I'll do the show mission statement really quick.
I'll take a break.
And then we'll get on to talking about current events too.
Mm-hmm.
So we live in a dynamic society where social media shapes us by creating greater opportunities for connection. It has led to a developing understanding of the adversity many marginalized communities face, the powers causing the adversity, and those who act as bystanders as atrocities take place in real time. Our goal with this show is to make connections and have challenging conversations about social topics, current events, pop culture, and art. Together, let's weave the threads of understanding with what privilege we have in order to learn, educate, and create in a world that's growing.
Fantastic.
Thank you. All those Emmy nominations came out, and I didn't see one damn Emmy nomination for us. How dare they?
Oh, that's funny.
So speaking of current event snapshot, which is the next thing in our list, let's talk about the screenwriter strike and now the actors and actresses are going on strike as well, like along with screenwriters. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, since that's part of like your field of expertise?
Yeah, well, they're on strike because of AI generated content. So really what it is because what they can do is they can take they're worried about copyright issues, that you can take someone's writing and they can put it into this AI, and then they can use that to learn how to write content from their writing, and kind of use that as a way to learn how to write in the future more content that kind of sounds like they're writing but isn't their writing. And mm-hmm. so, or they can use it to like edit their writing and like kind of do revisions to their writing. So they're striking because they're like, you know, I'm a writer. Like, I don't want AI messing with my writing at all. And like, I don't want AI writing in place of me. So it's saying that they don't want AI taking over the place of their jobs, or that they don't want people using AI as a way to take the place of real writers. And so Absolutely. It's saying that they want real humans in positions, and that they want to get paid accordingly. So it's really just what it is because, you know, what I'm concerned about is that they've already started to use AI as a way to, because I don't know if you saw the Secret Invasion intro that they had for Disney Plus. They replaced all of the digital animators to use AI generated art for that, and it looked terrible.
Really?
Yes,
I did not know that.
If you look up Secret Invasion, it with the Krell and stuff, it looks terrible. It looks just god awful, and so they're already starting to use AI generated material to replace people as a budget saving measure. So honestly, like it wouldn't be far off that, you know, making a low budget movie, saving on writers by using AI generated content, and just, you know, throwing away the writers because, hey, if you can get AI generated stuff, why not? Because not having to use people would be great. But the problem is that AI is dumb and doesn't know how to write properly.
Mm-hmm. Right. So even though people think that it does, but it absolutely does not. No, like I've been thinking about it a lot lately because obviously in my area of expertise, like in teaching, AI is becoming a big concern because it like creates like more opportunities for students to plagiarize and to be academically dishonest, you know, when we least expect it, right?
But it doesn't give smart answers is the thing.
No.
Did you hear about that legal case where the guy put stuff into AI to generate stuff, and it generated like fake legal cases and stuff, and it ended up like that he got disbarred and stuff because or they got into huge trouble because it was creating fake legal cases.
Oh, I did not. No, I did not hear about that. Wait, no, yeah. I think I did hear about that. It does sound familiar to me. All right. You're way ahead of me. I love it. My eyebrows are finally stuck down. And they've been set. Hey, Brian, it's good to see you. Arpy is here. Brian is here. Thank you guys for tuning in for our dressing up in drag episode. Let's see if I can successfully make my eyebrows disappear.
So, what is drag and where did it originate?
Ooh. So it's largely speculated. Because, like, there's a lot of, like, different conversation about this. But many people believe that drag originated during Shakespeare's time in the theater because at that time they needed people to fulfill the roles of women in productions. So the male cast would portray women. Right?
That's true.
So, and of course, until that was the case until, like, you know, women became more present in theater because we know historically speaking, men suck and we're super gatekeepy about everything all the time. So,
because women couldn't be actors, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, well, my eyebrows don't look perfect, but hey. And then there are also other areas of drag, and this kind of falls in line with theater as well, but like have you ever heard of the carnival-esque drag as being like part of clown culture and miming culture as well?
That's true.
So like there are many different kind of like points, I would say. Now, keep in mind, I am no historian. Neither of us are historians, but we do have like some knowledge of like the generalities of the history. So like, I'm not going to like provide like a dissertation.
No, and I don't know anything about, I knew about Shakespeare, about dressing up as women. They would do it because women couldn't be actors. And so it would be that they would have men dress up as the women parts. That's why you get things like Monty Python's Flying Circus today, where there's a convention in television drama or television where you'll have men dress up like women still. And that's kind of like a modern convention going back to Shakespeare. And like, that's the huge part of like British television today is like, men still dress up like women in modern British television, like comedy. And like, that's sort of like a thing. It's also a little bit transphobic in nature. And that they've had to kind of like go away from that a little bit because it does have transphobic like tendencies. It does have like a history of being like Shakespearean in nature.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it's interesting if we examine drag as it entered like the late 19th century and early 20th century. Mm-hmm. So in the 20th century, like drag became pretty significant because, well, it served as, in some instances, a form of decoy and protection for some people, right? And additionally, like as LGBTQ plus rights started being more discussed and, you know, started taking on like more of like a huge, large conversation, like drag became very much at the forefront of the LGBTQ plus rights movement in the mid to late 60s too. So yeah. Like, obviously everybody, well, not everybody, I would hope that everybody, a lot of people know about like the Stonewall riots and stuff like that. There were a lot of drag queens present for the Stonewall riots.
Well, not just drag queens, but like trans women.
Exactly. So now when it came to like the drag community, like trans people have been central to the drag community for a very, 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 very long time. So like entering, say,
the two are kind of synonymous at certain times. It's and I think that's why a lot of people get confused, is because they'll be like, are you a drag queen or are you a trans woman?
Well, and I think that's because a lot of people don't understand like that the difference that drag is an art form versus someone being trans is like their actual identity, right? And once it's explained, I think a lot, like most people are like, oh, okay, like that makes sense now.
Well, because the difference between drag queens, the way that I understand it, is that drag queens just dress up for, you know, fun, and that they do it as kind of like, you know, they do it like on a Friday night. But trans women dress up, not dress up, but it's who they are as a person, and they do it like it's 24/7, baby.
Right. That's who, literally an extension of who they are, right?
Right. Okay. It's their gender identity.
Exactly. So, and I think that's like right now in our country, like we see like a lot of villainization of the trans community, especially. I mean, the drag community has been villainized as well, but the trans community has been villainized because they just, a lot of people who aren't educated just kind of correlate the two so much that like they just get it all mixed up. This is my final look. I am kidding.
Mine was a lot easier to do than yours because I didn't have to put on like foundation or anything.
Well, if I don't put on some foundation, I look like a mess. So
I understand.
I like, this is like very quick drag tonight because like when Britt and I, you know, I should have uploaded pictures to this to show everybody, but when Britt and I did our drag personas during Halloween, we looked like, I mean, it took us like hours to do it and hours to practice and stuff like that.
But this is the difference between cosplay and drag, is that drag takes hours and cosplay, I can just throw on some makeup and put a wig on and I'm done.
I mean, it depends on what you want to cosplay too. If you want to do like certain types of cosplays, like it can, I'm sure, take just as long, if not more. But the thing is, the reason why it took Britt and I so long is because we literally had to like practice, because for both of us, we hadn't put on makeup since like high school or college. So like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. I need to put on some concealer on these eyebrows, because clearly they're not very concealed, are they?
Yeah.
Let's see if this works. If not, then everybody, you're going to just get what you get. All right, your look looks amazing already.
Like, oh, no. See, you're doing, like, full drag. Like, I feel like I'm underdressed compared to you.
No, like, I think that also you probably are just more seasoned at this than I am, because you've cosplayed so much. Okay, I need to dabble this in a little bit.
But you're doing like full makeup and stuff. You're doing like full makeup and stuff like that. And I'm just like dabbling.
Well, mind you, Ari, all I've really done so far, I've just glued my eyebrows down.
Hey, that's cool.
Because these brows are out of control. You know, there's some like career drag queens who completely shave their eyebrows off, because it saves them so much time.
So what was your history with the first, like, when did you watch, see your first drag queen?
So just to give you like some Cliff Notes version of my history, I used to be really uncomfortable with drag, actually, when I first came out.
Really?
And I think that that's something that a lot of gay men go through, much to their dismay, because drag is associated so much with femininity. And when a lot of gay men come out, they may not be necessarily secure in who they are, right? So, like, because of that internalized misogyny, they tend to lash out at anything that's feminized, right? So when I was in college, drag made me very uncomfortable because I didn't understand it fully. I didn't respect it very well.
Let's check the comments really quick before you.
Oh, yeah.
We've got RP. Hi, RP. We've got Brian. Hello, Brian. And we've got Taylor. Hello, Taylor.
Hey. Hey, Brian and Taylor. It's good to see you.
I can see how you would have some internalized misogyny, that you might be afraid of that, and that it might be a little bit too much for you. I had the opposite effect when it was my step foot into the gay community, that it was sort of like, that was my first encounter with gay men, is knowing people who did drag. It was sort of like that. This was like my first ability to know acceptance for gay men, is that knowing people who did drag.
Yeah. Like, I do think that in college for both of us, it was a very eye-opening experience, because I think it opened up avenues for us better understanding ourselves too, which, you know, not everybody fully understands.
Well, because I was at community college, so I knew gay men, and I knew people who did drag. And so that was my first encounter. I was about 18. And so like that was how I got to know people who did drag, is that was like,
Oh, Taylor says NPR did an amazing highlight on drag kings. Yes, we like honestly, drag kings are very underrepresented and underdiscussed. In fact, like even in like popular culture, like media, like Drag Race and stuff like that, drag kings really haven't been represented yet.
Ooh, we should talk about the Harlem Renaissance with ballroom culture.
Yes. Okay. So during the Harlem Renaissance, and of course this continued like late 20th century as well. Like, so ballroom culture became significant, especially for the Black and Latino LGBTQ plus communities, because it kind of became like a subculture that countered racism. And so like it created so much belonging for people and so many conversations surrounding like the intersections between being LGBTQ plus and, you know, one's identity with regard to race, right? And that was super significant, like, and it still is significant, I would argue.
Honestly, like, how I learned about the Harlem Renaissance was that show Pose. They did such a good job talking about ballroom culture. Also, there's a documentary, I can't remember what it's called, that talks about ballroom culture from the 90s. Oh, God.
I think I know what you're talking. I can't remember what the name of the documentary is. All right. This is going to be really funny.
It's a movie. It's something about Paris. It's
Paris is Burning.
I think it's called Paris is Burning. Yeah. I think you're right. I haven't seen it, but I've wanted to. It's on my watch list. I don't know if I've looked around for it, but that is an excellent documentary about ballroom culture as well. It talks great things about ballroom culture, and just amazing. But the reason why I like Pose so much is because it was created by the trans community. And it was created by people who were in that community, you know, for the community. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so
when we watched Pose, like, it was so eye-opening. Like, I knew of ballroom culture, but I wasn't, like, super duper familiar with it. So, like, when I watched it, like, it was so informative for me. And I think that it's informative for a lot of people.
Well, it just talked about the way things were during the 80s, you know what I mean? And it just talked about, you know, what it was like for people living in the houses. And I think that that's what made it so good, is that it felt like so close to being accurate, you know what I mean? And I just, I mean, I don't think it was like one for one, but I feel like it was, I think it felt like it was more of, you know, the story being told then.
This looks so terrible. Oh my God.
Yeah. And I think that's what made it so good. But then you get to like, you know, the 2000s, and then you get things like RuPaul's Drag Race and those other shows.
So have you watched a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race?
I haven't watched RuPaul's Drag Race. You know what I watched a lot of was Dragula. I love the Boulay Brothers Dragula.
I do love Dragula. Dragula's really, really good. I just recently got into Dragula, actually.
Did you watch? I watched the first two seasons, I think. I got really into that.
Yeah, I watched, I think I started at like season, like maybe two or three. And then like I went on to like Dragula Titans and stuff like that, which is kind of like the RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars of Dragula.
Yeah.
Yeah, friends, this is not going to be good, but you know.
But tell me about RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, What makes that show so great?
Well, I think honestly, like RuPaul's Drag Race is so great because it just kind of created like the first semblance of representation for drag.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of like propelled drag into the pop cultural scope when it came to like conversation about fashion, identity, and stuff like that. So like that to me kind of set the stage for a lot of stuff.
I think that's just RuPaul in general as well. RuPaul was kind of the person who, Taylor was asking who pioneered drag, and I think that RuPaul was kind of one of those big names that brought drag into the household names. I don't know, don't get me wrong,
like RuPaul has like had like moments of being problematic because at first like he was very like exclusionary of the trans community.
There was also a 1930s trans woman that talked about I don't remember, she was an actress, but she was a trans woman and she had gotten the gender reassignment surgery. Do you remember who I'm talking about?
I cannot remember her name off the top of my head. I think I know who you're talking about. I'm not letting my face dry well enough. I think RuPaul's Drag Race, obviously, like the Drag Race fandom now is so huge. Like there are like so many different countries version of Drag Race now. There's Drag Race All-Stars, Canada, so many. And I think that the fact that it's kind of become mainstream now, like a lot of that has to do with RuPaul's Drag Race. I think the Boulé brothers, you know, Dragula also has been very significant when it comes to drag because like a lot of like drag artists and designers and stuff like that have participated in like film industry as well. I mean, let's think of Divine, right?
Oh my goodness, Divine.
Ursula from The Little Mermaid was inspired by Divine, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's not such a great inspiration, though, because they made her into the villain.
Right, that's true.
It's because they wanted to villainize, drag queens and the LGBTQ+ culture, and that they see us as the villains, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not such a great... It's not such a great inspiration, in my opinion, because it's sort of
what does that say, right?
Yeah,
that's a very good point, honestly. Now, so what was okay? So, did you talk yet about like your first exposure to drag?
My first exposure, I was 18, maybe 19 years old. I was at my community college. They had a drag night. So I was dating this really problematic guy, right?
Ooh.
So his mom is a lesbian. So she was putting on this drag night. And so, I was going to this drag night and it changed my whole life because I was like, wow, there's all these people who are drag queens. And then I found out somebody in my class was also a baby queen.
A baby queen. I love that.
You know a baby queen is like they just are getting started in drag.
They're just starting. So yeah, they're just beginning to make it a career.
And I was like, because they were in one of my classes, and I was like, I became friends with this person. And I was like, I will have a gay friend. And I was like, I want to, be accepting and understanding and be like the kind, good friend. But honestly, it was just because I wanted to feel, I think at the time I didn't realize just how much I wanted to ingratiate myself into the LGBTQ+ community, because it was that I secretly was LGBTQ plus, mm-hmm. and I just needed to feel safe somewhere. And it was just that I was longing for belonging. And it's just that I hadn't come out yet. And I just needed somewhere that I could feel safe.
Yeah. Like a lot of like, I think a lot of people can definitely connect with that, because for many, the drag community is so accepting and loving. I mean, I'm sure there's like variation in any community, but P.S. I'm using my Evanescence Fallen color palette. We'll see how well this goes.
But it's just that I've always been different, and I've always found the people in my life who are different as well. And it started at a young age, and it's like, you know, you always find the people who are different, and mm-hmm. I guess society deems weird, and it's sort of like, you know, you just all find each other eventually, you know?
No, absolutely. That's so true.
And my sister was like, wasn't there a gay bar around here? And I was like, yeah. And I used to go to it. And she was like, because my sister and I were driving around, and she was like, wasn't there a gay bar around here? Because there used to be, in my hometown, there used to be a specific gay bar that all gay people used to go to. And it was like a club.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah. And I used to go to it. And now there's, but it closed down because all of the gay people got scared. And so now there's mm-hmm. like no specific like actual gay club that people go to.
Why did they get scared?
Because I don't, you know.
Was there like a lot of like homophobia? Like, well, I mean, we're talking about Mesquite.
Well, the thing about it was, is that it became kind of like a spectacle that a lot of not gay people would go there, like women would go there and try to hit on the gay men.
Yeah.
And so it became
it kind of became uncomfortable for people.
Yeah.
Ari, this is looking rough, but you know, hey, what are you going to do?
It wasn't, it became not a safe space for just gay people to hang out. It was sort of like, this is not what it was intended for.
Right.
I think it would do well if it were here today, but it definitely did not do well back in the day.
So I don't think I mentioned my first exposure to drag yet, have I?
You have not.
So my first exposure to drag was in college. I went to a drag night. It was like for coming out week, I think, something to that effect. Should I put on some glitter?
Yes.
It was like for a drag night for coming out week. And I went to like this show, like it was like a small drag show. It wasn't anything huge or anything like that. But I got to like experience drag for the first time. And that was like kind of like my first catalyst for becoming a little bit more comfortable with understanding what drag was as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My next significant exposure to drag was when I was toward the end of college. I started going to gay clubs every once in a while, and I went to a gay club and I got to meet some drag queens, and they were so inclusive and warm and loving, and I absolutely loved it. This is all I'm doing with my eyes. It does not look perfect. What I was going to draw eyebrows on, but I don't have time for that, so.
Oh.
Oh. Oh. Hello.
Oh, you did not lay your wig, honey.
I do. I what? What did I do?
It's called laying your wig.
I had it on something, but it didn't sit very well, so. Where'd my brush go?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Lay your wig.
There we go.
Yeah.
Look at that luster.
I'm jealous that you don't have to use a wig cap.
I did when I had longer hair. And now that it's shorter, like, it just, it sits there and it's kind of nice. So I should put some.
No, you don't need lipstick. Look at you. Oh, you do. You can put some lipstick on, though.
I think I want to.
Okay. So we'll be red lip together. We'll be like twins.
This color is called, what the hell is it called? It's called Bewitched.
You are going to be bewitching with it.
Am I going to be bewitching?
You're going to be bitching.
When I did drag for Halloween, I actually made my lips bigger because, like, my lips aren't, like, super.
Did you plump them?
I plumped them.
Yeah.
That's very hard to do. Like, I would say between doing that and, like, doing eyebrows, those are the two hardest things to do.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
This is.
I feel exactly... so overshadowed by your now.
Oh, gosh. Hardly. You look stunning.
No, you look so good. I'm like so jealous.
I look like I crawled out of a trash can.
No, you look this so is, good.
This is not the scale in which I did for Halloween, because for Halloween, I like started at like 4 p.m.
You look so good.
Thank you. So do you. And we have 20 minutes to spare for conversation, which I love. Okay. So let's talk about, have you ever been to a drag brunch before?
I've never been to a drag brunch. Can you tell me what it's like?
Oh my goodness. Drag brunches are so fun. Like, you basically go someplace, you buy food, and then you're entertained by drag queens while you have great food, while you have mimosas. It's so great. I absolutely love it. And like, sometimes they'll like interact with you and stuff like that. It's really, really fun.
My goodness. Do they have that where you live?
Not often in this area. No, we have to like go elsewhere for that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They probably had them in Seattle when I lived there, but I was always so busy that I never had a chance to do something like that.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Like, I have to imagine they probably do drag shows and stuff in like Grand Rapids and stuff like that.
That's probably true. I could probably look it up and see if they have drag brunch. You know, but I don't have anyone to go to with stuff like that. See, you and I have to go to a drag brunch sometime.
I think that that's definitely something that we're going to do. Like, we're going to put that on a list and we're going to make it happen. Look, there we go. My hair was like bubbling for a second. So hello, Godzilla Kairu. How are you? Arby loves the wigs. Arby asks if we have drag names. So Ari, who are you cosplaying?
I don't know. It's kind of like a mix between like Ramona Flowers and I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm like a children's book character of some kind. I don't know. It's like a mix between like Ramona Flowers and like a children's book character, but I don't know which one specifically. Maybe like I don't know which one though. But it's sort of like I'm off to save the world or something.
you're off to save the world.
Through reading.
Isn't Ramona Flowers is from
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I love Ramona Flowers so much. There we go. Ooh, it was like, there we go. That's a lot better. Okay. Let's see. Godzilla Kairu says, doing good. Been working on my Kaiju anthology collection project thing. Yes, we are having fun with this. I reminded you of when Adam Lambert's drag looked way better than this. Let me tell you that, but thank you. So my drag persona, which I created last year, her name is Sangria Noir. So sangria being my favorite beverage, one of my favorite beverages, and noir being a genre in film and fiction, I absolutely love. So I felt that I'm going to meld the two together, something that has not been necessarily heard before. And at least I did research. I was like, nobody came up with this name yet, right? And that's how it happened. Obviously, this is only partial drag, because if I wanted to really go full, I would have a beard, and you know. But there are bearded queens out there. There are bearded drag queens.
That is the most wine mom answer to a drag queen. You're like, I really like wine, and so this is my wine. I came up with a name for my drag name, and that's my drag name, is because I like wine.
I like wine and Peloton.
I love it. It's perfect.
Oh my goodness. So, when did you first start, like, when did you start feeling comfortable dressing in any form of drag?
God, it's only been this year. I've only been doing this like a couple months now.
Yeah, like, it's not been super long, has it? What was the catalyst that got it for, that got you into it?
I bought a wig and I was screwing around for, it was a TikTok. I dressed up like Barbie for a TikTok. And I was like, I kind of made a joke about, you know, haha, I'm Barbie, haha. And I did that in December, I think. And then I was like, you know, I had this water channel for YouTube, and I was like, I want to do cosplay for YouTube. And I was like, I wanted to dress up more. And I kind of like committed to it, and I bought a bunch of wigs and some outfits. And I was like, this is fun. And I really like that I can just, you know, go into a closet and just put on something if I feel like it.
I love that. Okay. So I started probably 2 or 3 years ago, because 2 or 3 years ago, Britt and I cosplayed as Velma and Daphne from Scooby-Doo. Mm-hmm. Right. This is after like Britt had gotten me into like Drag Race and Dragula. So like, I really wasn't interested at first, but then I like saw like the like artistry, the personality behind it. And I was so fascinated by all of that. Like, it wowed me. And now, like, when we did Velma and Daphne, like, I just felt like Velma. Like, it felt so great to be a character.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to fall in love with it. And after having watched Drag Race for so long and Dragula for so long, like, I, as a person who loves fiction, the thought of creating a persona / character was such a really cool thing for me. And that's why I kind of created Sangria Noir. Sangria Noir is supposed to be kind of witchy. She's like 3,000 years old, but she always tries to stay trendy. So she's like witchy and like an old soul, with thous and thuses and stuff like that. However, she's like also like, like, that's so lit. Who says lit anymore? That was like 2014. But you know what I mean.
I like it.
Oh my goodness. But no, like, when I was a kid, I always would put on my cousin's dresses. My grandma would let me wear my cousin's dresses, and I would always wear like I would take like a sweater and drape it over my head to pretend that I had like long hair. And that's how I would play teacher when I was a kid. I would put on my cousin's hand-me-down dress, and I would like have my little sweater hair on, and I'd be like, all right, class, like, let's, let's do science now, you know, to my Godzilla toys. And it was really,
I like it.
It was something.
That's fun.
And I think for me, like, obviously I'm not a professional in drag. Like if I really practiced it, I'm sure I could improve, but I think that drag has made me very comfortable with my androgyny, if that makes sense, with like allowing myself to kind of blur the lines between the boxes that were placed when it comes to how we should appear, if that makes sense.
Yeah, mixing the masculine and the feminine.
Yeah, because like for a long time, like I was bullied for femininity. So like I definitely like masculated myself a lot. And now that I'm at this point in my life where I'm a little bit more secure, I feel as though I'm able to take those internal feminine qualities that I've always had and make them external in whatever way that I'm comfortable with doing, you know, in an artistic way that, you know, involves like creating a persona, you know, like I think that's really cool.
And that's kind of how I feel about when I put like feminine wigs on and stuff, is that, or like put makeup on and things, is that like, for me, it's because I don't truly ever feel like a woman, or I don't truly feel feminine enough. So for me, it's sort of like I'm pantomiming femininity, even though like most people would be like, you look like a woman to me. To me, I don't feel woman enough. So it's sort of like, this is how I pantomime femininity. It's like that I just don't understand what it means to be a woman. So like, this is how I understand what being a woman is like. So I understand, like, to me, I understand like what how you kind of understand femininity as well, is because it's like, I understand that as well, like through those, that same lens. Is that like, to me, it's how I connect with femininity, is that I can put on a wig and put on makeup and things. And that's how I connect with femininity again, is that I do those things. And like, it, because to me, this is like, this is really cute. This is really cutesy. And like, sort of, it's really feminine, but like my hair doesn't look quite so cutesy like that. So it's like, to me, it's like very hyper feminine. And so like,
and then like the glasses do the trick too.
Ooh. Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about this, but we'll work with it for a while. No, like, but so like at the end of the day, like it's validating in some fashion, right? Like it's, and that's so important. So like going back to, oh, Godzilla Kairu says, I hope you guys are not too hot where you are. And if so, you guys are keeping cool. That's why we're not putting on a full drag outfit tonight. Because if we did really want to go full on cosplaying / drag, like the outfits would be sweltering. And I'm in an upstairs office, not doing that. I have like 10 fans in here running right now. So, no, like I think going back and talking about like the political attacks on the drag community, like, a lot of people, like a lot of these states that are passing legislation against like the drag community, all do it on the basis of they think that it's somehow grooming children, because they have like this notion that like drag is like just nothing but sexualization, and it isn't at all. Like if you go to drag events that are designated for children, they're always, you know, appropriate for children, right? Like drag story hours, for example,
because they see it as sort of like a perversion of some kind,
right? That's the association. Of course people deny that, right? Because they don't want it to associate with that, but that's really where, that's their angle. But I personally think that drag is significant because there are so many people, like so many LGBTQ plus kids like you and I, who were being told like what box to place themselves in all the time, you know, at their expense constantly. And that's so like defeating for people.
Well, it's just saying that we're not allowed to be around children, that we're dangerous around children in any capacity, in no matter what capacity that we're in.
Right, exactly. And I think that drag creates visibility for the LGBTQ plus community. Like, I think when people see drag and acknowledge it and are educated regarding it being an art form, they realize that, you know, like, this isn't intended in some nefarious way. It's simply human expression.
Do you think, right, that there's kind of like a relation between drag queens and like geishas? Do they kind of relate them as a way of like geishas in some way?
So, I mean, I don't necessarily know if they equate them simultaneously, but I think that they've looked at how LGBTQ plus culture has been represented in the media, and the media represents us largely in a sexualized way constantly, right? And I think because of that sexualization, that's the thing that they gravitate toward constantly, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that, like, that's not been significant to our community, you know, in the past and can still so, but like, our community is a spectrum. There's so much diversity to it, right? And this isn't about grooming children at all. It's simply existing. It's simply showing people that we're here and that. Because
geisha is kind of like an art form as well. It's sort of like, yeah, they have, but there's like a sexualized, there's kind of a sexualization of geishas that they're considered, oh, yeah, like wives, and they're considered like kind of prostitutes in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like if you look at pre-World War II Japan, absolutely. And I think that in a way, like there are some correlations, but I also think that I think the biggest correlation is the fact that it is both are art forms, right? Both are considered, mm-hmm, art forms, and both have been like villainized before, both have been fetishized before, exoticized before, even at the expense of those who are active in the art form, right?
Yeah, because when I think about drag queens and the taboo-ness of them, sometimes I think of the way that geishas are treated, and because even geishas have like houses too, and so, mm-hmm, the correlation between the two, it's very interesting to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the other, and mind you, like, I'm not a historian with regard to either, but I think like when it comes to drag, it's often been like a person of one identity, you know, donning the aesthetic of someone of a different identity, if that makes sense. And mm-hmm, I guess when you think about it, geishas kind of embody that too in a different way. Now that I think about it, it would be interesting to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So I guess now that we're nearing the end of our, this probably might be one of my favorite episodes that we've done, because it's been so fun. And I somehow managed to be able to focus enough to have conversation throughout all of this as well. Although, thankfully, you were here to keep me on track a few times. You were like, okay, let's talk about this. Here I'm powdering. Ooh.
That's because I got done early, so I was able to keep us focused.
thank you for my tether. I'm a kite and you were my tether.
I'm just the manager in this.
Can I talk to the manager? So okay. Do we have any advice for people who is interested in exploring drag more so?
I have no advice. I have no advice. I don't know. Make sure you invest in a good wig and some good foam boobies.
Yeah. Or like, even so, like if you're not really familiar with it, read up on what drag is.
And learn how to walk in heels.
Which is super, ooh, I struggled with that when I tried it. Like, don't be afraid to check out like the different things in popular culture with regard to like RuPaul's Drag Race, Dracula, If you see that there is something happening locally where there's like a drag brunch or a story hour, you know, feel free to attend and you know, participate if you would like, right? I think that getting that knowledge, I think that's going to help people feel more comfortable about, you know, what drag is, right?
Fly that flag.
Fly that flag. So, dost thou have any final words for the evening?
If you want to do it, just do it. Don't be scared. Just, you know, maybe set up, just take some pictures of you doing it. You don't have to always post them, but just, you know, try it out. See if you like it. Buy a wig.
Yeah, and if you love it, that's great. If you find that it's not for you, like, then that's totally fine as well, right? That doesn't mean you can't still enjoy other people doing drag too and partaking in it. So I, like, at the end of the day, like, I, as an LGBTQ+ person, like, finding that balance when it comes to self-acceptance, like, that's been a significant part for me. And I think over the past year or two, like, drag has helped me appreciate different aspects of myself. So yeah. All right, everyone, thank you for joining us. We hope that you will come back next week, and I guess you guys have a good rest of your night. Bye.
Bye.
Mwah. Mwah.